The wages system. Over the past couple of centuries, the world of home, that is the world of the household or homestead, with its place in the community, set within the natural world, has been all but eliminated in favour of the place of work, where a wage or salary will be earned to provide the money income upon which all our livelihoods depend. We educate our children into the firm belief that what they will do for money is their sole concern in life. From as early as 4 years of age, they are removed from the home and taught to observe sets of rules and regulations designed to meet the needs of a firm or corporation, the place of work, that is, the place of working for money. The child has to fit the system and not the other way round. That is, the system is not designed to develop the spiritual, emotional, or aesthetic qualities of the child. It is to be done, if at all, in any spare time left over after formal schooling ceases. All this is very sad. Some years ago, a hairdresser was minding her 4-year-old granddaughter whilst at work. "Will you be a hairdresser when you grow up?" asked the client. "Oh, no," was the firm response from the child. "When I grow up, I want to be a mummy. And if I'm lucky, I'll be a grandma. And if I'm very lucky, I'll be a fairy godmother." Children see things very differently when left to their own thoughts. By now, the little girl will be programmed to take her place in the world of working for money system. So what is this world of working for money, otherwise known as the wages system? As we have seen, in economic theory, the original ownership of land and capital has no relevance. In practice, land and capital are owned by capitalist firms and corporations. Without the land and without the tools, labour, however skilled, can produce nothing. It follows that for permission to use them, the workers must be prepared to pay. But the firms will not give permission to workers to use the tools they possess. They will only sell permission to them. But they will not even sell if they can help it. They will only lend to them. And they will not lend to them if they can help it. The firms prefer that the workers should lend themselves to the firm. This lending by workers of their energy and skill to the firms who own the main tools of production is called working for wages. And in England, the vast majority, well over 90% of the people, belong in this category. The same is true for the people of most countries in the world today. Waged and salaried workers are slaves of the firms and corporations. When the firm has legal ownership of land and capital, the workers, the employees, can produce absolutely nothing without prior permission. This lending by men and women of their energy, talents, time and skills to the owners of the factors of production is disguised in the case of managerial and professional work by calling a job a salaried appointment. But in fact, all who do not possess one or other of the tools of production depend upon the sale of their energy and skill for a living and are therefore classed as wage or salary slaves. During the first decades of the 20th century, many leading writers and thinkers saw clearly through the nonsense of the circular flow of economic orthodoxy. In the modern industrial economy, the households do not own land and capital, which they sell to the firm. The firm owns all the factors of production except labour. This crucial fact cannot be assumed away and at the same time leave economic theory and its devoted adherents, the professional economists, with a leg to stand on. The fact remains, the firm needs labour. However sophisticated the technologies, it still requires the focus of human eyes and the exercise of human fingers to assemble the electronic equipment, to build the buildings and man the machines. Without willing labour, the firm cannot exist. The power of the military-industrial complex lies in its ability to control the people, ostensibly for their own good. The people have to believe that it is right and proper, their bounden duty, to seek work in order to justify their existence. "He that does not work shall not eat" takes on a whole new meaning when it is said by those who control the use of the community's resources, that is, those who hold legal control over land and over all the capital, and hence control access to those resources. At the same time, access to the common cultural inheritance of the community, that is, the knowledge systems, news and information, is controlled and moderated from the same source. The great danger to the powers that be is that awareness of the truth should leak out to the general population. Were that to happen, the firms would have great difficulty in holding the allegiance of the people. Recognizing this fact, in the immediate aftermath of the First World War, poet, playwright and humorist A.M.R. O'Duffy wrote his Goshawk trilogy, exposing the truth about and the absurdities of the money employment system. His hero is on the verge of persuading the common people that there is an alternative to the economics of recessions, depressions, and war. The powers that be wheel out their top economists to explain sound economic theory. The expert explains why it is essential for the whole of the natural world to be bought up by commercial interests. The economist has this to say. Supposing a party of people were wrecked on a desert island, what do you think would be the first thing they'd do? Obviously, they would look around for a man with money to employ them in gathering fruit. If there were no capitalist among them, or if he didn't see his way to make a profit out of the business, they would all remain unemployed and starve to death, no matter how fertile the island might be. If, therefore, we want to have plenty of employment, we must give every possible incentive to entrepreneurs, encouraging them to get as much of our money from us as they can so that they can spend it on employing us to make more for them. O'Duffy's trilogy is an entertaining read, but it ends on a despairing note. Despite being brought up amongst the wonders of nature in the Golden Valley, the hero's children opt for the modern lifestyle to which they have been introduced by attending mainstream educational establishments. They take up employment as salesmen of applesauce mix and the like. In the next talk, we take a closer look at finance and the social order.